The Catholic Channel SiriusXM 129 presents Just Love with your host, Monsignor Kevin Sullivan, Executive Director of Catholic Charities of the Archdiocese of New York.
Welcome to Just Love. This is our weekly conversation about the church and the world. Just do it. Just love God, just love yourself, and just love your neighbor, and our world will be more just and it will be more compassionate. Thanks for joining us today on Just Love. And if you want to check out my blog, justloveblog.com, and you can follow me on Twitter at MSGRKSullivan, and you learn more about the topics that we talk about here on Just Love. Well, we're into the Easter season. We're well into the Easter season, and we're also approaching Tax Day. Tax Day is April 15th, and we're really, really on top of it. And so we thought that one of the topics we would deal with today is the issue of kind of taxes from a moral perspective. And I'm delighted that in a few minutes we're going to be speaking with Professor Robert Kennedy, who is a professor at the University of St. Thomas in Minnesota, on taxes. And so I'm delighted that we're going to be doing that. Also, a little bit later on in our show, we're going to be speaking about volunteering. We're going to be speaking about the volunteer award that Catholic Charities USA gives, and we're going to speak with Jeff Zierfoss, who works out in Colorado as a volunteer in one of the food programs that is out there. So I'm delighted we're going to be able to do with that. And in fact, although I was kind of a bad boy and didn't make it out to the annual conference for the directors of Catholic Charities from throughout the country, a couple of things going on in New York this past week that I just couldn't miss. But this is the past week when Catholic Charities directors from all of the dioceses throughout the country get together and kind of they try to provide mutual support with each other, learn from each other, and to kind of set a direction for things that our Catholic Charities agencies should be focusing on to provide the help that people need and to create hope in their lives. Now, I'm not going to make any remark at all. I'm just going to point out that it took place in Las Vegas. So whether or not that was a big gamble or not, I don't know. But I'm just saying that maybe it's a gamble. But you know what I'm told is one of the reasons that groups meet in Las Vegas, and sometimes it's a little counterintuitive. People say, wow, that's a place where everybody goes to gamble. They go to have fun. Why is a serious organization meeting there? Well, I'm told that sometimes the hotel rooms, and I'm told that sometimes the airfares there are pretty reasonable, and so that it's a somewhat economic place for groups to have their convention. I'm not sure about that, but at least that's what I'm told. And so anyway, so thank you for being with us on Just Love. And I think as we get ready to pay our taxes, probably many of us have already done it, but probably a few of us have kind of put it off to the last moment. I'm delighted that we're going to talk about the issue of taxation with Professor Robert Kennedy, who is at the University of St. Thomas in Minnesota. Professor Kennedy, thank you so much for being with us on Just Love.
Well, I'm delighted to be with you, Monsignor. Thank you for the invitation.
Well, I'm delighted too, because, you know, I think everybody thinks about taxes as kind of, you know, taxes, you got to pay them to the government, all that type of stuff. But as you've kind of written about and thought about, there's a little bit of a moral dimension to taxes, and you've written a little bit about that, have you not?
Yes. In fact, I just have a small book coming out this month on justice and taxation.
Okay. So you're going to make some more income. You're going to have to pay some more taxes. So it's all tied in together, right?
Well, yes, it is.
Okay. Well, that's good. We like when professors kind of publish books and they kind of get the royalties from those books. So anyway, Professor Kennedy, so tell us a little bit about, kind of give us a little bit of the background for our listeners on, you know, where do taxes fit in our Catholic thought, our Catholic wisdom? How do we view that from our perspective?
Well, of course, you know, we have the gospel injunction from Christ himself that we give to Caesar what belongs to Caesar and so on. But even more fully, we have a vision of society in which government has a proper role to play. So on the one hand, we reject the idea of extreme libertarians who think that no government is the best of all, or the most limited government is the best of all. We see that government has a proper role to play in society, and as a consequence, government deserves the resources required to perform its proper role, which means that most of us have an obligation to contribute through taxes.
And, you know, Professor Kennedy, just to kind of give our listeners a little stage, I've heard this, is that compared with the rest of the world, we Americans don't do too bad in actually paying the taxes that we're supposed to. There are not a lot of tax cheaters around, and the compliance is a lot higher than in some of the other countries in the world. Did I get that right?
Oh, I think that's true. We actually have a very high rate of voluntary compliance in the United States, which, among other things, means that the costs that government would have to bear to secure the payment of taxes is much lower. It means that it's a more efficient system.
Okay. So, you know, it when we think about it, it's government isn't the question, as you phrased it. Not so much, we don't get into a big theoretical argument about this, but we get into a practical argument, because government needs the resources it needs to do its job. But then we argue about, well, how much? Is this too much? This too little? Are they taking their fair share, or are they not taking their fair? Isn't that where we kind of get into some of the nitty-gritty and the yin and the yang of the discussion of taxes?
Oh, certainly. And the you know, there are several perspectives on this. The church has long been concerned about what they sometimes refer to as the expansion of government activities. And so any question about a fair level of taxation has to address the question of government expenditure. Is government involved in too much? Is it not involved in enough? And the position of the church, at least, is that much of this will have to do with the freedom of citizens in a particular country to choose how much they wish government to be involved in. Some countries may delegate many more tasks to government than other countries may do, but that's their freedom to do it, if they do it freely.
And as you say, part of the issue is, and I think you phrased it real clearly in the beginning, in much more eloquently than I'm going to paraphrase it, to say, in the current environment, you get people on the extreme left who say, we can't even figure out how to get up in the morning unless government tells us how to do it and it's regulation. And those on the extreme right basically say, if we just got rid of everything government did, we'd be a much better people. And obviously, I've just painted extreme positions. But sometimes when you hear tweets and when you hear commentaries, you almost think those extreme positions some people are saying with seriousness.
Well, some people come close to it.
Yeah.
You know, one of the things, you may remember this, St. Irenaeus.
I do, because I'm old and decrepit, so I remember him.
Well, we belong to the same club. At least my kids think so.
Okay. But I don't have any kids to speak of, so they don't pick on me that way.
Well, St. Irenaeus, who was a bishop in France in the 3rd century, gave us a lovely phrase that I think is at the heart of a lot of Catholic social thought. He said, the glory of God is man fully alive. The glory of God is man fully alive, which means that the goodness of God is manifested in the human capacity to think, to reason well, to choose well, and to participate in society. And that's really what we're aiming for. So on the one hand, those who say, as you put it, that we can't really do much of anything without government direction, really undermine the idea that a person who's fully alive is fully active, choosing well, so on and so on. But at the other extreme, people who insist that government has no role are effectively denying the social character of human persons. And the church rejects both of those extremes.
Yeah, and I think that's why we get in a lot of kind of verbal or intellectual fistfights, because we're defending ourselves both from the extreme left and we're defending ourselves from the extreme right, because sure. they want to attack us because we're kind of stuck in the middle saying there's truth to a lot of different positions on this.
Well, yes, and I think that what the tradition of the Catholic Church has tried to do for so long is recognize that a number of values have to be balanced, and things go awry if we emphasize one value to the diminishment of all the others.
Well, you know, to kind of follow up on this train of thought, you know, we oftentimes, I think, in some of the conversation, we equate politics with society.
Absolutely.
And government with, probably more government yeah. with society.
Yeah.
And what I say a lot of the times, hey, as a society, we got to make sure that everybody's got enough to eat. As a society, we got to make sure that people have good education. But not every single part of that has to mean it's all guaranteed by government. We got to leave space for vital, not only individual actions, but actions of neighborhood associations, actions of the Rotary, actions of unions, actions of trade associations, because all of those can create an atmosphere in which the basic needs are being met. And then we use government to kind of fill in the gaps of what the rest of the institutions of society are not doing.
Yeah, no, I agree entirely. In fact, I think there is a kind of misunderstanding that we've borrowed from political philosophy. You recall, and you certainly deal with it all the time. You embody it. The idea of subsidiarity,
right?
And it's often assumed to mean that we drive decision making down to low levels.
Right.
But in fact, what I think it means in the Catholic tradition is that we recognize the organic character of society. Different parts of society have different proper functions, and subsidiarity means respecting those proper functions. So I'm putting in a more complex way what you just said.
That, yeah, and let me rephrase it in yeah. another way, which is moderately complex. What subsidiarity doesn't say is downsizing is always the correct answer.
Absolutely.
It says that right-sizing
Precisely.
Is the answer, and right-sizing yeah. in some situations could be more government. In other situations, could be less government. It depends on what's going to, pardon me, what's going to get the job done in the best way.
Yeah. No, I think that's correct.
So I'm here in one of those bad places on the coast. You're in the heartland of the country where all goodness in America grows from.
I'm glad you recognize that.
I do recognize that. Fortunately, no, I can't say what I'm going to say. I'm going to get in trouble if I say that. But I'm not running for office any place, but certainly not in the heartland. So anyway, but hasn't, though. In the current environment, in some conversations, taxes have become like a four-letter word.
Well, I don't think there's ever been a time in history when people didn't complain about taxes.
Right, right.
And it certainly has been the case over the last century or so that the government demand for revenue has grown dramatically, very dramatically. I don't have the figures in right. front of me right now, but you know, it's just over 100 years ago that we implemented an income tax in the United States.
Right.
And I think the correct calculation is that in constant dollars, over the past 100 years, government revenues have grown by a factor of about 175. In other words, 175 times greater than they were at the beginning of the century, which imposes a much greater tax burden on people. Now, it's not that they haven't also received benefits from this, but certainly there is some foundation for having a discussion about the level of taxation and whether government should be doing everything it does, and so on.
And again, the other question, which is, I mean, I had this little bit of this argument a couple of weeks ago when I was talking with somebody about public education, and I mean, unfortunately, in a lot of our urban areas, public education is in a pretty bad shape in terms of the outcomes it produces in educating everybody who goes to public school. So not too many people dispute that.
Yeah.
And in fact, just parenthetically, we find at Catholic Charities that an increasing number of the programs that we do are support programs for both the kids and the families who are in public schools to make sure that they stay in school, to make sure they graduate, to make sure that they move on to a career in college or someplace else, because we find that's where some of the most struggling families and individuals are, and that's where a lot of our programming is going on because of that that situation.
Sure.
So I guess the conversation I was having with somebody who was kind of arguing for public schools in New York City getting a fair share of their money, and I said to him, listen, my point is, let's spend the money right, and let's figure out how we get the job done right, and rather than just pouring more money, let's pour effective resources into getting the job done. So, you know, as you say, the growth area, well, let's look at if we're getting what we're paying for.
Yeah. Well, too often in so many areas of our lives, we think that good intentions outweigh results.
Right.
And I think that, and it's not just government, it's business and it's universities and it's healthcare and so on. We need to get over that attitude appreciate good intentions, but also expect measurable results.
Well, you know, Professor Kennedy, Professor Robert Kennedy, who is professor of Catholic Studies at the University of St. Thomas in Minnesota, and I'm sorry, listeners, I should have made sure you knew who I was talking to because I'm just getting so into the conversation. But when I do orientation for our new staff at Catholic Charities, what I say to them all the time is, I assume you want to do something good. Assume you want to do the right thing. Now that we've gotten that off the table, let's make sure you are doing the right thing, and how are we going to measure it, and how are we going to make sure that you're doing it? I said, because we solve problems of people who maybe don't have housing, maybe they can't find daycare. We solve problems of people who have family problems. And I said, they're coming to you not because they necessarily want a smile or a friend. They want a professional help, yes, with compassion and yes, with warmth. But they want their problem to be solved, not to just have a nice conversation about it. So, you know, Professor, I agree with you completely. Whether it be government, whether it be our charities, whether it be our universities or our institutions, we got to make sure that they're actually achieving the goals and the purposes for which we're allocating a lot of dollars to them.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think that's, and the other issue is, and this is a bugaboo of mine, but I say it all the time. I talk about our charitable institutions and our churches. I refer to them as partially tax exempt. And the reason I say that is because I don't care what the academics or the non-academics or the spin doctors can say. The Social Security is a tax.
Yes.
And as an employer, you're paying 8% or so on the salaries of the people who you're paying. Rightfully so. No problem with that. But don't say that churches and nonprofit organizations are completely tax exempt. Tax exempt from profits, which most of us don't make. Maybe tax exempt sometimes from some property taxes, some sales tax. Thanks be to God. But we pay our absolute fair share into retirement Social Security stuff.
Yeah. Well, as you know, Monsignor, many institutions in many of our larger cities now are making contributions or payments in lieu of tax,
right,
to help pay for infrastructure and so on. It's common in Boston. It's coming up in the Twin Cities here, and, and so on. So my university is spending several hundred thousand dollars a year, and not strictly speaking a tax, but helping to pay for road construction and so on.
Yeah, and again, I think, you know, as we talk about, you know, there are some issues of justice that we need to say, you know, if in fact, and I take a chance because I know the world is different in different places, but, you know, if the fire department is responsible to put out fires and, you know, is it, you know, not a bad idea that, or maybe it is fair that a nonprofit organization does make some contribution to that. And my position would probably be, I don't think a priori you can say, oh, no, they shouldn't because they're tax exempt. And I don't think you could say a priori they should pay the full share. It's probably a little bit of weighing, you know, what's a fair or equitable amount to contribute to what they're receiving from the common good. And I know a few phrases of economics, and so I get in a lot of trouble that you don't become a complete free rider in the local services that are there.
Yeah. No, and these discussions are going on around the country.
Yeah. And actually, you know, we've got a big blow up in religious circles, but that's a lot of what the issue was in the Holy Land in Jerusalem a couple of months ago when the municipality of Jerusalem decided to begin to tax the religious organizations were there. And there's a big hoopla about that because they hadn't done it before. So it is, you know, it's an issue that's ongoing. There's not a simple answer, but we should be able to have a civil conversation about it from the perspective of the common good, private initiative, equity, and all of those issues which you so eloquently kind of touched on in our conversation.
No, absolutely true.
Hey, so Professor Kennedy, please go back to teaching, go back to writing, go back to your work. But I do thank you for taking the time to be with us on Just Love today. Thanks so much for your contribution as we approach Tax Day.
It's been my pleasure, Monsignor. Blessings on all your work.
Great. Dr. Robert G. Kennedy, who is Professor of Catholic Studies, University of St. Thomas in St. Paul, Minnesota. We talked about taxes and justice. You know, in a few minutes, we're going to talk to somebody, just for a brief conversation, about something that I bet is going to surprise you. Some people fill out their tax forms and file taxes not because they have to pay, but they actually get money back. So stay tuned and you learn how you, well, I'm not saying you, but how some people get money back on their taxes. You can follow me on my blog, which is justloveblog.org. Follow me on Twitter at MSGRKSullivan. And we're going to take a break on Just Love. Just do it. Love God, your neighbor, yourself, and our world will be more just and more compassionate. We're going to come back in just a moment on the Catholic Channel, Sirius XM 129. Welcome back to Just Love. I'm Monsignor Kevin Sullivan. This is our weekly conversation about the church in the world. Follow me on Twitter at MSGRKSullivan and check out my blog, justloveblog.com, and you'll see things about the topics that we talk about here on our hour a week on the radio show, and you can learn a little bit more about them. If you miss one or you want to listen to our radio show again, you can go to the website and you can hear the download of the various shows that we have had over the year. You know, so we just talked about paying taxes, but I want to talk about now how some people get money back in their taxes. And so I'm going to talk with Linda Eddy, who is the Dutchess County coordinator. And Dutchess County is one of the suburbs around New York City. And she is the coordinator with the Hudson Valley Cash Coalition. And I think they use the word cash because people who file their income tax, if they're at a certain level of income, which is very, very, very modest, they actually can get a refund if they follow their taxes. And so she's involved in making sure that people who can get some tax money back do get it. Linda, thank you so much for taking the time to be with us on Just Love.
Wonderful to be with you. Thank you, Linda, for the opportunity.
Linda, isn't this a fraud? Come on. You can't get money back on your taxes. So you're just you're just scamming all these people to come in, and you're like Facebook and all those. You're taking all their information, but they're not getting any money back, are they?
Absolutely. Yes.
Really?
Yeah,
how's this work?
Well, we are partners with the IRS in this particular program.
Oh, okay.
We're not the bad guys.
All right.
Excellent. Okay, so yeah, we work with a coalition of not-for-profit organizations here in a tri-county region and provide free income tax preparation assistance to low and moderate income individuals. And as I mentioned, we're in partnership with the IRS. We are also in partnership with Catholic Charities, United Way. I work specifically with Community Action Partnership for Dutchess County. We have lots of other organizations that are involved, local banks, local libraries, local churches, local colleges as well.
So tell our listeners, so what's the deal? How do you get money back?
Well, there's certain credits that individuals might be eligible for. Specifically, the earned income tax credit is a very important credit for working families and individuals. It's designed as a credit for low to moderate income earners. There are some eligibility factors that are involved to determine whether they're, again, eligible for the credit. But it is an important credit. That, in as well as the child tax credit together, is responsible for lifting 9.8 million individuals out of poverty a year. So that's amazing numbers.
That's a lot of people. That's a lot of people. And
yeah.
And I'm told last year you helped prepare and file over 7,000 tax returns in just a couple of counties outside of New York City in the Hudson Valley. Is that right?
Yes, yes. Our particular region works very closely with AARP Tax Aid, and that is the foundation of AARP, a separate organization than AARP. It's their not-for-profit foundation. So our volunteer tax preparers helped to assist file those numbers of returns. So it's phenomenal numbers. And we work very closely, again, with all of those organizations to spread the word not only about the free tax preparation, but also in the fall time when it comes time for recruiting volunteers to assist with this, because it is a volunteer-driven organization.
So give our listeners a sense. So you filed 7,000 tax returns. About how much money did that generate in return?
As far as federal refunds and credits, it was about $6.4 million.
Wow. So, and if I do my math a little bit, that's like a little bit on average of under $1,000 a person.
On average, yes, yes. And then in addition to that, I'd like to point out.
Hey, Linda, I don't have any kids. Can I get? But I don't make a lot of money. Can I get some money back, or do I have to have kids?
Well, the earned income tax credit is eligible for folks that are single as well.
Hey, I'm coming next year.
Definitely.
Oh, that's
definitely. And also, I wanted to point out the fact that that number, as amazing as it is, we also estimate that on average, maybe $200 per tax preparer that it costs to file a return, right, if you're going to a paid preparer. So it's about $1 million that we're saving individuals in that aspect too. And again, this is for folks that cannot afford a paid preparer. And we're there to support low income individuals and making sure that they're getting the credits that they're eligible for. But as we close for the tax season this year, we want folks to recognize the opportunity that this presents for next year, because we are pretty much pulling up the tax sites at this point.
Well, we only got a couple more days, and so anyway.
Yeah.
But so, hey, Linda, thank you so much. I don't want to take your time, because we got to get it to 8,000 this year so we can get more money back for the people. And again, let me be just serious for a moment. I mean, you know, if somebody's making, you know, $150,000 a year, you might say $500, $700. Okay, it's nice and it's important, but you know, you have somebody making $15,000, $17,000 a year, and they get $750 back. Whew, that really can make a difference between whether they can pay a month's rent, whether they can, have more nutritious food, whether the kids can get, you know, new shoes to go. I mean, we're talking about the basics that $750 or $800 can the difference it can mean in a low income family's life.
Yes, absolutely. And we do a little survey for the folks that are willing to share the information about what they're going to spend their refund on. And for those that are giving us that information, 80% of those folks are spending that money on paying bills.
Yep. So, hey, Linda.
So making ends meet.
Linda, thank you for the work you do. Thank you for making thousands of lives better, them to live in more dignity, them being able to provide better for their families. Linda Reddy, thank you so much for being with us on Just Love.
Thank you for having me.
Okay. The Dutchess County Coordinator of the Hudson Valley Cash Coalition that works to make sure that low-income people file their taxes, because many times, because of the credits, they are eligible for a refund. So thanks for being with us on Just Love. We're going to take a break. We'll be back in just a moment. I'm Monsignor Kevin Sullivan. Just love. Just love God. Just love your neighbor. Just love yourself. And our world will be more just and more compassionate. This is the Catholic Channel, Sirius XM 129. Welcome back to Just Love. I'm Monsignor Kevin Sullivan. Just do it. Just love God. Just love your neighbor. Just love yourself, and our world will be more just and more compassionate. If you want to learn a little bit more about the topics that we talk about, you can follow me on Twitter at MSGRKSullivan, and you can check out my Just Love blog, and you learn more about the topics that we're talking about. Well, we talked about taxes, both paying and getting back. And this week, I'm delighted because Catholic Charities just named its Volunteer of the Year. And so we're just so glad to have that Volunteer of the Year with us, Jeff Zierfors, who is the owner, and he's with Common Cause Catering. But he was just named Catholic Charities USA Volunteer of the Year. Jeff, thanks for being with us, and congratulations on your honor.
Monsignor, you are so sweet to congratulate me. I am honored and flattered and just so beside myself, so excited.
Okay, but I want to know, so what's for lunch today?
So it's funny that you asked.
Right. Why is it funny that I asked? You're in charge of a team that serves a 4-course lunch every day. I'm hungry. So what's for lunch?
Well, the risk when I tell you this is it's only going to make you hungrier.
Ah.
So we made a dish today. Well, so we start out, the first item through the buffet is a green salad, all fresh greens that come in.
You guys from Colorado, you like this health stuff. So, I mean, okay, so we got green. So we got a little bit of healthy in the meal, right?
Exactly. Yeah, so we have that. You know, we get a lot of that stuff from local farms. And, you know, it's all fresh produce, all fresh tomatoes, everything like that. But we made it was sort of a cacciatore of sorts.
Okay.
So I know out there in New York, all y'all get excited about your Italian food.
Right.
I can't claim to do it in true New Yorker style, although I grew up in Pennsylvania.
Okay.
But it came out delightfully.
Great. Oh, that's great. And about how many people do you serve on an average day?
We're somewhere between 550 and 700.
Woo!
And that's 7 days a week, 365 days a year, rain, snow, sunshine.
Wow.
Weather, cold weather, it doesn't matter.
Wow. And I know it's buffet style, but is it sit down or do they take it out with them?
No, we have a dining room. Okay. The dining room itself seats about 100 people. And so, you know, you can imagine the logistics between feeding that many people in a 100-seat dining room in a limited time like that.
Yeah.
You know, but it's important for us for people to come through, not just get delicious, nutritious food, but also have an opportunity to, you know, sit down and visit with their neighbors and, you know, enjoy food and conversation and fellowship all together.
You know, Jeff, let me just share with you a little bit how much I appreciate what you just said. In New York here, we at Catholic Charities here have a very, very extensive network of food programs that are feeding people sadly, there are so many of them and sadly they do it. But given what's going on there with us, most of them are actually pantries. But fortunately, we have a few of them that are kind of sit-down meals where people can come in. And I really like that. We can't do it every place, but those places that do it, from what you just said, it treats people as guests with some dignity, the opportunity to do that. So, again, a super kudos to you for doing the Marion House in that way. Thanks for doing it that way.
You know, I love it. It's a really fun team to be a part of. And, you know, we're not just feeding the body, we're feeding the soul.
So you're doing this, your wife's in cahoots with you in doing this?
She is. Well, so we own the catering company together, but we actually met at the Marion House. She moved to town. She was new to Colorado Springs. I had been living here for some number of years. But she was what some of us affectionately refer to as a corporate refugee. She was a senior administrator for a big healthcare organization in Texas. She relocated here and was trying to figure out kind of what she wanted to do with her life. Came to the Marion House as a volunteer, and the short version of the story is the rest is history. We've now been married for 6 years. We have a 4-year-old son. So it's, you know, it has proven rewarding to me on several fronts, you could say.
Oh, that is great. So, but tell me a little bit, you actually have a company called Common Cause Catering, right?
We do. So it's a social enterprise, and I presume you're familiar with the term, but I'll kind of fill in some of the details if there are any of the listeners that haven't heard that term before. So we are a catering company, but for us, we're not a food company. We're a change the world company. And so our mechanism for that, you know, if you look at us as a catering company, we do high-end full-service catering and event planning. So if you're having a retirement party or a birthday party or a nonprofit fundraiser or a corporate lunch or something like that, we will provide you with a delicious, from-scratch, seasonal, locally sourced meal. But in the process of...
Is that your 4-year-old?
It is my 4-year-old.
Yay!
He just ran in. Yeah.
Hello!
He'd say hi back, but he just Nana just pulled him back out of the room.
Okay.
So in the process of putting that food together, we need to have it prepared, and so we can find people that have experience at preparing food, or we can find people who explicitly don't have experience who can benefit from an opportunity to learn those job skills. And so for us, you know, we're working with individuals from Catholic Charities and from some other nonprofits in town who are looking to try to move towards self-sufficiency. And so it's an opportunity for those individuals to come in, learn some life skills, learn some job skills, earn a paycheck, but earn a paycheck in a supportive environment where they can be not just treated with dignity, you know, certainly that's important to us as well, but an opportunity for them really to come in and learn the skills that they need so that they can get back out on their feet and take care of their families.
So we're speaking with Jeff Zierfoss, who is the owner of Common Cause Catering, a social enterprise in Colorado, along with his wife, and who has just received the Catholic Charities USA 2018 Volunteer of the Year for leading a team of 40 volunteers in planning and carrying out a 4-course lunch. And so at Marion House Soup Kitchen, which is one of the programs of Catholic Charities of Colorado Springs. So we're just delighted that he is with us today. You know, Jeff, let me dive down a little bit, because I really am interested in the notion of social enterprise. But I'll share with you, not a little bias, but a little experience, is it's hard work both trying to least sustain a business and turn at least a profit, and also kind of doing the right thing. It's not simple to do it, I believe.
You are absolutely correct. Although, you know, I have a tremendous respect for all of the small, just regular, plain old small business owners out there. Being in business for yourself is challenging no matter what the business model is. For us, it's an opportunity to embrace this idea of conscious capitalism and going out and earning a profit and being a profit-driven company, but only in so much as we can do so while having a positive impact on our community. And so the struggle is real. Some months more real than others.
Right, right.
But the, you know, there's an imperative for us to be profitable, because the month that we can't make payroll or the month that we can't pay to keep the lights on, that's the day our social impact stops.
Exactly.
But we say a lot, we are more successful as a social enterprise than we would have been as a regular for-profit company, in part because people love to tell our story, so there's some real marketing value around it. As catering companies or restaurants or landscaping companies or roofers or so many businesses that employ individuals on the lower end of the income scale, you're working with individuals who have some sort of challenge in their background for them to still be looking for a minimum wage or a near minimum wage job at the age of 40.
Yep.
And so what we're really doing is finding these people who have these challenges, who have acknowledged these challenges, who are trying to move beyond them and provide them an opportunity to make something happen for themselves. You know, you hear the tagline in nonprofits a lot about a hand up, not a hand out.
Right.
And that really is so central to our business model.
Well, that is great. Thank you so much. So listen, I gotta kind of take us on a little bit of a diversion for a while, because I see previously you were restaurant manager and sommelier at the Broadmoor.
Which, I was.
Okay. Now, remind me, let me refresh my memory a little bit. Is there a bar there or something that's got the name like Golden Bee or something? Is there?
There is, yeah. In fact, I managed that room for a little over a year.
Okay, so let me tell you a story which goes back probably a decade or so. I can't remember exactly what it was. I was actually visiting Colorado Springs, and actually with somebody from Catholic Charities of Colorado Springs, and we went for a drink in that bar. And we're sitting there, and it was very, very nice, and a bunch of college kids, or maybe just out of college kids, came and sat next to us. And maybe you'll be able to date this, because they were talking about the movie Woodstock, and they had just seen it. So they were ecstatic. They were going on about a great movie it was and all of how great it was, et cetera, et cetera. And, you know, I'm eavesdropping a little bit and they're talking about it. And I said to them, I just said, "Boy, it was great." And they turned, and because I'm old and decrepit, I mean, I'm not. So, I mean, you know, I had decades and decades on them. And so they said, "Oh, so you saw the movie too?" And I said, "No, I never saw the movie." And they said, "Well, but you said it was great." I said, "Well, yeah, you're talking about, yeah, well, it was great." And then I said, "It was great." And they said, "But you didn't see the movie. How do you know it was great?" I said, "Well, because I was there. I was at Woodstock, so I didn't have to go see the movie." So, Jeff, for the rest of the night, they bought us drinks if I told them stories about the real Woodstock, not the movie.
Oh, that's so funny.
And so I remember that. I remember that to this day. So it was. I remember it was a very nice place, a very nice room that was there. So that's my kind of one Colorado story. So going back to where we were on the social enterprise piece, do you see your business growing? Do you see some other areas you might be able to branch out into that you might be able to grow in different ways?
We are always growing and always evolving. So our newest sort of project is a destination called the Carter Payne. It is a 120-year-old stone church that we just purchased. And so we are looking at this space as really kind of a multi-tenant destination for the community and for building community. So we have a brewery that's called Local Relic that's doing also a social enterprise that is doing 200 unique beers a year, sourcing art for labels with local artists, sourcing ingredients locally, working with urban gardeners and urban farmers, and you know, all sorts of cool stuff on that front. We're operating a restaurant incubator in this space. So we're working with individuals who want to try to open a restaurant, give them an opportunity to come in, spend 12 months and prove their concept, prove their theme, test out menu ideas, demonstrate profitability, build a following, gain some momentum. And, you know, we really see it, you know, it's an old church. It's a building that was built around this idea of community. And for us, it's a really cool opportunity not just to cultivate social impact businesses in this space, but also to provide a venue for members of the community to come in and visit and tell stories and You know, get to know their neighbors, get out from behind their keyboards, and get out and have real conversations.
That is wonderful. And you know, and as you said before, I think you're involved in this with your eyes wide open, knowing that there are lots of challenges that it faces. And as you alluded to, you know, just ordinary small businesses who, you know, are not in this for the perspective of social enterprise, but they're just looking to make a profit. I mean, I just hear all the time, the percentage of those small businesses that fail each year is huge compared with those that make it. Am I right on that?
You are, absolutely. But one of the things that's really unique about the social impact and social enterprise world is that there's a real spirit of collaboration and a willingness to share ideas and share kind of insider secrets with other social impact businesses. So if you're a for-profit, you work really hard to protect all of your intellectual property and protect all of your secrets and protect all of your, you know, everything that you think gives you a competitive edge. Nonprofits are, in many instances, collaborative, but there's also sometimes this negative spirit that starts to creep in where you don't, you want to try to limit the number of competitors that you have going for grants or going after the same donor base.
Right.
Social enterprise is kind of unique then in this space where it's about taking an opportunity to help other businesses that also want to make the community a better place. We understand as a social enterprise that it's our goal to help people. There's more mission than we can accomplish by ourselves. And so if there are other social enterprise businesses that are looking to try to grow and further their social impact, if we can help them be successful, we're not helping our competitor per se. We're helping our teammates in making the world a better place.
Hey, Jeff, thanks for taking the time to be with us, and congratulations. I had nothing to do with it, but Catholic Charities USA made a great choice, Volunteer of the Year, and congratulations to you and to your wife, Melissa, and say hello to your four-year-old who popped into the room there.
I will. You know, it was a pleasure to talk to you. I am flattered and honored and so grateful, and I appreciate the platform to be able to share all the great work that we're doing here in Colorado and with Catholic Charities nationwide.
Great. Jeff Zierfoss, the owner of Common Cause Caterer and Catholic Charities USA's 2018 Volunteer of the Year for his work at the Marion House Soup Kitchen, leading a team of 40 volunteers and serving a four-course lunch every day of the year there. So we're just delighted that he is with us. And so we continue our Easter season. We continue to celebrate the Lord's being raised from the dead. And we do so in a time when there is ongoing need. And I'm just delighted the work that Jeff is doing. I'm glad we were highlight the work that Catholic Charities in Colorado Springs is doing, that they were doing great work there. And to, excuse me, talk about taxes, because tax day is right upon us. And the fact that it is government, it is charities, all of that, that is working together to try to make sure that as a society, we make sure that basic human needs are met. It's not government's responsibility alone. It's not philanthropy and charities alone. It's not business alone either. But all of us have a responsibility. And one of the things Catholic Charities tries to do is to build the partnership across those sectors of our society that we need to come together on to make our world kind of more just and more compassionate, to make sure that basic human needs are met. And it's sad, but the current political environment is one in which you get a lot of harsh rhetoric and you get a lot of rash policies that make Catholic Charities work harder to do. And I do say, as I said a little bit before, is, you know, we can all focus on very high offices, one individual and say, boy, that's bad. But we got to be realistic that, unfortunately, some of the harshness and the rhetoric, some of those rash policies is not limited to one office, or it's not only in one individual, but there's too much of it in the world around us. And we have to make sure that we ourselves don't become more of the problem, and that we enter into a world when we bring our passion, our zeal, our values to a conversation. We do it in a way that is civil and seeks to bring people together. So thanks for being with us on Just Love. Follow me on Twitter, MSGRKSullivan. Check out my Just Love blog. This is our weekly conversation about the church and the world. Just love. Just love God, neighbor, self. Our world will be more just and more compassionate. This is the Catholic Channel, Sirius XM 129.